This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Haney. Later in the show, a celestial conversation, including what's happening with NASA's Voyager mission. First up this afternoon, a teacher in a typical classroom is challenged with educating students with a range of learning skills and abilities, some average, some below average, some above. And teachers often need to focus on the students who are struggling to keep up with the rest of the class. But what about the students who are far ahead of their classmates, the ones who never seem to need any help? Joining us to discuss the needs of gifted children are psychologist Dr. Suzanne James, Betsy Singh, gifted program coordinator with Cincinnati Public Schools, and Nicole Dietrich, gifted consultant with the Hamilton County Educational Service Center. And Suzanne, Betsy, and Nicole, thanks for joining us this afternoon. You can join the conversation at 513-419-7100, email talk at wvxu.org, or find us on Facebook or Twitter. Betsy, how does the Ohio Department of Education define a gifted child?
Sure. There are four different areas for gifted identification in Ohio. The first is superior cognitive, and that would be a child who is receiving a cognitive ability score 2 standard deviations above the mean for a cognitive abilities test. We also have the specific academic, which is in an area of reading, science, math, or social studies on an achievement test, and it would have to be a 95th percentile or greater on that total area. We also have creativity, which is usually defined by 2 different tests, and an arts program, which can be visual arts, dance, drama, or music.
And when you screen for gifted children, those are the 4 specific areas you're screening on, correct, Betsy?
Yes. And it has to be through a state-approved test, which there's an exhaustive list that you can find in the Ohio Department of Education's website.
Nicole, do we have any idea of how many gifted children there are in local public schools?
That's an interesting question. I would say we probably, it depends on the school district. Some districts, depending on the socioeconomic status of the district, they identify a great percentage of their population of students where other districts struggle to identify. And that is largely due to some test bias that prevents some of the lower socioeconomic students from demonstrating their giftedness.
And just as an aside, usually 6 to 10% of the population is identified as gifted. So if we can look at an average like that, so the total state population might be around that, but it would differ between districts.
Suzanne, what are the common characteristics of gifted students?
Well, there are common characteristics of gifted students. Of course, everybody's an individual. So you would look at certain intellectual characteristics such as creativity, such as verbal skills, learning at an early age, memory, that sort of thing. There's also people have more of a nonverbal gifted ability, which would be people who are, you see the children that are doing the Legos at age 1 or building tremendous things. And there's people who have athletic gifts that don't normally get talked about. There's the gifted creative people who can sing, dance, write. And then there's the emotional gifted qualities, which is really high sensitivity, awareness to your environment, very, very intense personality. So there's a broad range of characteristics.
And I would say one of the most fun characteristics would be sense of humor. We often see a really elevated and fun, witty sense of humor with some of our gifted children.
Nicole, being gifted sounds like it's a good thing for these kids, but it doesn't come without challenges, does it? What are some of the difficulties that they face?
Feeling isolated and different from their peers, especially if they are pulled out into a resource room for quote-unquote special services. A lot of times, teachers sometimes who don't know how to differentiate well for their gifted students will give assignments that are not above and beyond everybody else. It's extra work. So a lot of times they feel penalized also just for having to do more work instead of more challenging work.
Their parents face difficulties too, don't they, Betsy?
Yes, they do. Trying to find the challenge in the classroom is difficult. Also trying to understand the oversensitivities and the emotional issues that go along with being a gifted child. If you're not a gifted adult and these aren't things you've experienced, sometimes it's difficult to understand what a child is going through. One of the biggest things that we find with gifted children is asynchronous development, which is going to be really difficult for people to understand. if a child is highly gifted, we see a superior cognitive ability level of a 140. That means that intellectually they are able to understand a lot. That doesn't mean that a 5-year-old is able to be a 12-year-old. So we look at a child, we see that developmentally they're not able to handle social situations, or they're not able to throw a ball like other children or use their scissors. But they might have the intellectual abilities to be much brighter. So we're expecting a lot from that child when we really they only have the intellectual ability at that time.
Both Betsy and Suzanne have referenced the gifted overexcitabilities or the supersensitivities of gifted children. And a lot of times parents will realize that their children are different, that they're more gifted before the teachers will because of the intellectual overexcitability, there's physical overexcitabilities, there are emotional overexcitabilities. Kids who can't stand the tags on their clothes, or they might have sensory issues, smells, sensitivity to taste, foods. A lot of those are indicators that a child might be gifted. And again, if you're not familiar with the gifted overexcitabilities, you can reference those. They come from a Polish psychologist by the name of Dabrowski.
Suzanne, overall, how well does the U.S. education system do in teaching gifted students?
Well, it's very, very difficult because of resources and knowledge about the gifted people. It was actually something I was going to interject earlier, which is, there's a huge group of gifted people that we call twice exceptional, which are people that are gifted, but they have some kind of learning disability or an emotional disability that impacts their learning. And this is a huge struggle for the teachers as well as the school system, because they may be able to think on a level that's 99% above their peers, but they may work slower. They may not be able to take in as much information because of executive function or ADHD difficulties. They may be highly anxious, or they may have something like dyslexia or Asperger's disorder or sensory processing integration disorder. So it's very, very difficult. I do a lot of work with parents on trying to manage what you can expect from the school and what you might have to do at home to assist your child in learning to their potential and being socially and emotionally healthy outside of the school system, because the school cannot provide every single child everything they need.
Overall, though, how would you say the education system does in this country for dealing with these children?
Well, that's a really broad question. I don't know if I can answer that specifically.
Maybe Betsy and Nicole can weigh in on what they think as well.
Okay. Well, what I was going to say is that if they're identified, they have pullouts that they do for the kids. If the child is twice exceptional, the test scores may not show that they're gifted. And so then they kind of go under the radar. And then that's not really the school's problem. But unless the child brings it up or the parent knows, then that will be something that will be identified through them. And then I think they do the best that they can by the group tests that they can offer and by the amount of resources that they have. Cincinnati is providing a actual gifted, you know, lots of different gifted programs and different gifted schools that not all places have.
I think it's really important for parents to understand that in the state of Ohio, at least, that gifted students, schools are required to identify gifted students, but they're not required to service them. So a parent might receive a letter that their child is gifted, but they might not offer services. So again, some school districts are going to do much better in this area than others, and that's due largely on funding.
In Cincinnati Public, where I'm from, we do have a variety of services that we offer our children. And one of the services that we have had in place for the last 4 years is Gifted Academy for students in grades 3 through 6, which is a self-contained gifted academy for children of that age. The only problem is that we don't have enough space. There are many more kids that are gifted that need this type of service. She was discussing a pull-out program. That's another. I think that one of the largest things that needs to happen is that we need great parent advocates. Most of what happens to assist our gifted children in their education is through the adults and the parents that will help that happen. So going to the schools, finding out how you can get involved, know the state law, know your district's board policy, and being able to share your time, your effort, your funding to help the gifted programs in the schools, because it normally is one of the least represented populations. When you have a struggling reader, you want that reader to read. When you have a child who can read, it's difficult to make a decision. What more can we do for them when we need a struggling reader to read? So having those parents in the buildings, having those parents working fairly, responsibly, and passionately with the administration instead of against the administration is a great way to continue to have these programs strengthen.
Suzanne?
Oh, I was going to add on that, you know, they've done some research recently, and what they've shown is that not only do you have to be providing your child an education while they're in school, but it's really, really imperative that they provide extra services after school, even with their homework that they have to do, adding on some extra ways of learning math through some different programs, always having your child work their brain, because if their brain is not working, then it is slowing down. And so the research has shown that the people who are most successful, the gifted children who are most successful as they get to become adults and go to college, are ones that the parents have provided after school activities that increase their knowledge, as well as during the summer providing educational opportunities.
And absolutely, I think that's a wonderful suggestion, Suzanne. The only thing that I would hesitate to do is to overstimulate, to not spend too much time on so many brain activities that we don't have downtime, because we do have a large percentage of gifted children who are perfectionists, and creating that opportunity where they never have downtime could also increase that. So we don't want to do that. We want to make sure they've also got downtime, playtime, time to be kids.
Okay, and I would also like to add that I think it's important for parents to look for opportunities not only in their child's area of strength, but gifted children also have distinct areas of weakness and maybe areas that they're not as interested in. There's some really great research out there by Dr. Carol Dweck. She wrote Mindset, the New Psychology of Success. And basically, her research shows that we have one of two different mindsets. We either have a growth mindset or we have a fixed mindset. If we have a growth mindset, we believe that our abilities can change and grow. If we have a fixed mindset, we believe that our abilities are something that we're born with. And all of the research shows that gifted kids are the most at-risk group of kids for developing a fixed mindset, because we've told them they're smart, you're so smart, and they believe that that's something that's innate. So they are very hesitant to take risks and to do things outside of their comfort zone because they feel like that's a reflection on their innate ability, that someone might figure out that they're an imposter and maybe they're not so gifted after all. So I think it's really important that we need to challenge kids to have more of a growth mindset as well.
513-419-7100 if you'd like to join our conversation. Let's talk with Alan in Dayton. Good afternoon, Alan. You're on Cincinnati Edition.
Hi. I just wanted to say thank you for doing this wonderful program. I have two extremely gifted children, and they are both in college now. And one thing that helped them a lot was an after-school education program. People think of those programs as being for the children who are struggling, and that is certainly part of the audience that's served. But I know for both my boys, one loved math, hated reading. The other one loved reading, hated math. By doing an after-school education program, they improved across the board, and it was only about half an hour a day of extra work. But it really supercharged their brains, especially in areas where they were weak. And now that they're in college, one's studying computer science, the other's studying math, both at top colleges. And I know the reason they're doing well and not struggling in college like so many of their friends is simply because of the after-school education that they got. They were doing college-level work before they were out of high school, and so college-level work did not come as a shock to them. And I'd like to know if anyone else has any experience with after-school education as a supplement for gifted children.
Okay, thanks. Alan. Good question. Thank you very much.
Hi, Alan. It's Dr. James, and I was going to let you know that your children are succeeding because you've really worked hard, clearly. You didn't let them fall by the wayside. So that's wonderful. And that's what you got to do with kids that need this extra assistance. And I think one other area that I was going to add is not only educational, but executive function. So many of these kids are so smart that through the elementary school years, they can do things quickly and they don't have to organize their thoughts or their writing or whatever. And then they get out into middle school or to fourth or fifth grade when the work becomes more intense and they have no idea how to organize their work, their time, to focus and to learn. And it hits their perfectionism mode, which means that they don't feel like they're good enough. It can cause them to become really anxious. So if you can help kids be challenged, learn how to do the hard stuff early on, like you did, and teach them how to manage their time and manage their work, it would be very, very, very helpful.
Thank you very much for the call, Helen. Let's talk with Blair in Dayton. Good afternoon, Blair. You're on Cincinnati Edition.
Hi, all. Thank you so much for the great conversation. I love that Dr. Carol Dweck was just mentioned because I feel like, and I'm sure you are all aware of this, the increasing prevalence of the word grit in terms of evaluating students. And I was hoping to get a sense of, do you feel as if the tests are able to evaluate something like grit or perseverance, or is that not really a part of this conversation about gifted children?
So is your main concern about the test being too standardized, maybe, Blair, that they're not looking at traits beyond certain things?
Right, yeah, because I think that it seems like, you know, sometimes the conversation about intellectual abilities of children seems to be expanding into multiple intelligences, and I feel like there's been a lot of articles about something that really matters with success in the world is this sense of perseverance, and I'm wondering, do you see in your day-to-day work with the children, does that seem to be an intellectual ability, or is that more of a character type ability that's more removed from the academic setting?
Okay, Blair, thank you for the question. We appreciate it.
It is absolutely a gifted characteristic that will show itself in school and outside of school. The standardized tests aren't necessarily going to show it, but teachers can see it, parents can see it. Psychologists can see it, the school personnel can see it, and it's something to be identified for sure. It's not necessarily a complete gifted characteristic. It can be a high achiever's characteristic where someone can be very motivated and learn at high, high levels and like that challenge, but that's not their natural ability. But it's a wonderful, wonderful trait.
Nicole?
I tend to like to think of grit and tenacity almost as another intelligence. Some people are more innately born with more of that grit or tenacity in the face of something that's difficult. But the really important thing is that it's fluid. It's not static. It can be influenced and it can be changed. So no matter how fixed your mindset is, with a little bit of work, you can be trained to adapt more of a growth mindset.
Let's talk with Ian in Cincinnati. Good afternoon, Ian. You're on Cincinnati Edition.
Hello. My name's Ian.
Hi, Ian.
I just wanted to thank you guys for this conversation. I really can relate to this. Like, growing up, I was identified as sort of a gifted kid. I had a high IQ score, but I also was diagnosed with dyslexia. I'd write papers, like, right to left instead of left to right. And also a written language learning disability. And I can just really relate to what you guys were talking about, like feeling isolated and sort of different, because when I was in school, they didn't know really where to put me. At one point, I'd be in the learning disability class, and then they'd move me to the advanced class and then to the general class. And if it really weren't for my mom being a strong parent advocate for me, I don't think I would have gotten the resources that, you know, I did get. So I appreciate this conversation.
Thank you, Ian. We appreciate the call.
I think we're getting a lot better, Ian, probably since you've been at school and addressing the multiple needs of the gifted or twice exceptional child. You know, and a lot of that is really driven by state mandates and the fact that if a child is identified and as gifted in a specific subject area, they can't be prevented from receiving those gifted services because of their learning disability.
Suzanne?
Oh, and I was just going to add that dyslexia is a very scary word for people. It actually affects 20% of the population, believe it or not. And so it's so good that you came out. The tests are getting really, really good at being able to identify this and show that it's on a continuum. And that even if you aren't someone that writes, you know, the wrong way or puts things backwards, you could still have dyslexia. I am glad that you had your mom to be an advocate for you and help you through that. And I think the schools are getting so much better at being able to help people with dyslexia.
And I would say, too, from our listener before, the question about the peer groups after school, getting with a peer group after school that enjoys some type of exciting creativity, stimulating camp or after school activity is a great way to also make sure that you continue to grow, to be with kids, that you find a peer group that interests you.
Debbie sent us an email. She says her seventh grader is trying to fit in. She's gifted. She's trying to fit in, but she doesn't really want any of that extra attention. So her question is, how do you balance fitting in like her peers, but also getting the attention and assignments at her level to keep her challenged and not bored? She says, I thought I might be better in junior high versus elementary school, but it hasn't gotten much better. So, Suzanne?
I think it's very, very important for her to find a peer group who accepts her for who she is, whether they're as intelligent as she is, but who accept her for who she is. You can do that through some of the gifted parents groups. There's also Super Saturdays, some activities. Northern Kentucky, well, it's not through Northern Kentucky anymore, but there's a program called Explore More that gifted kids can meet other gifted kids. Very, very important. And, you know, you can't force your daughter to not accept who she is and not want to stand out, but you can keep talking to her about it being okay and about healthy relationships and healthy experiences and what to look for and help her become more comfortable with herself. And as she meets some other people outside of the school system, I can guarantee she will become more comfortable with who she is.
I think, too, she needs to learn some strategies for self-advocating with her teachers to be able to fairly discern what she can and can't do and be able to explain to her teachers what she's able to master and show that mastery so that she can have an intellectual conversation with her teacher that will let her teacher understand where she needs to go so she won't be stifled in that classroom. So self-advocacy is really important, especially as we reach middle school and high school.
Nicole, there's an event coming up on March 7th. Can you tell us about that? The Southwest Ohio Coordinators of the Gifted are going to be holding an event for parents, right?
Yeah, Hamilton County Educational Service Center and the Southwest Ohio Coordinators of Gifted have come together this year to coordinate an event for parents. And we will have some of these opportunities that we've been talking about for students outside of the school day. They will be summer opportunities and after school opportunities for kids. Some of the vendors that will be there to tell about their programs are Newport Aquarium, Drake Planetarium, Women Writing for a Change, iSpace, among many, many others. And at the same time, we will also have experts such as ourselves who will be there, and we will present small sessions on different topics around gifted and talented students.
And there's a link for more information about that event at the WVXU.org website. Suzanne, Betsy, and Nicole, thanks for talking with us today.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us.
Psychologist Dr. Suzanne James, Betsy Singh, Gifted Program Coordinator with Cincinnati Public Schools, and Nicole Dietrich, Gifted Consultant with the Hamilton County Educational Service Center. After the break, we'll turn our eyes to the skies for a conversation with the Cincinnati Observatory's Dean Regas and Jim Bell, author of the new book about NASA's Voyager mission. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU.